Hi, Pulse Check listeners. Feeling sluggish after a long weekend? Well, you may think you're moving slowly, but did you know information is whizzing around your brain at a minimum of 260 miles per hour? Not bad for a Monday. This is Pulse Check. I'm your host, Catherine Ellen Foley. Here's what you may have missed over your Thanksgiving holiday that helped set the stage for the looming spending fight in Congress. Research America, a nonprofit health and medical research alliance including top U.S. universities, hospitals, and drug companies, has written to Democratic and Republican leaders in both congressional appropriations committees, urging lawmakers to boost funding for scientific research for the rest of the 2023 fiscal year. The group asked Congress to increase funding for the National Institutes of Health and the nation's other research agencies in the omnibus spending bill lawmakers plan to finalize next month. And the Biden administration rolled out a six-week sprint to improve the nation's stubbornly low uptake of the latest COVID boosters. So far, only 11.3% of eligible children and adults have gotten the new shot, despite persistent pleading from federal health officials, who are concerned about new COVID infections ahead of the winter months. The administration will spend $350 million in new funding to community health centers for pop-up and mobile vaccine sites, and $125 million to get the vaccine to older Americans and people with disabilities. But further COVID spending may be in jeopardy with the incoming split Congress. Earlier this month, the administration requested more money from Congress, but Republicans have said its inclusion in an end-of-year spending package is unlikely. And we'll be right back with my colleague Nick Niedzwodek, who joins us today to talk about how long COVID is clashing with disability policy across the country.
Hi, I'm a labor and employment reporter for Politico. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us today, Nick. So how is long COVID disrupting workplaces across the country?
As obviously more people have experienced long COVID and for longer periods of time, and they're sorting out about how disruptive it is to their individual lives and also their ability to carry out various jobs. Last year, the federal government announced that it could be classified as a disability, and that opens up a range of employment protections and also the ability for people to seek certain workplace accommodations so that they can continue working, albeit in a modified state. And part of that is there's difficulty in terms of determining what is and is not reasonable in terms of like what is required of an employer, and that's one difficulty. But for some people, their symptoms are severe enough that they kind of can't continue on working. And then those people are starting to have to explore social security disability and things like that and having to go through that process, which has long been criticized by lawyers and advocates as being very cumbersome and frustrating for people who kind of by definition do really need some level of monetary assistance if they can't be in working.
So with long COVID being classified as a disability, I had kind of thought that we have a good system for accommodating disabilities in this country already. Can you talk about how long COVID is a little bit different?
Yeah. So part of that is because of the varying presentations of long COVID, that creates a lot of difficulties in having a standardized blueprint or template to kind of work with. So you could imagine, for instance, it could be a very minor situation, like if you lose your sense of smell, that is obviously not ideal, but it most likely will not be affecting you in the workplace. But if you have things like extreme fatigue and other things that are pretty commonly associated with long COVID, that could be much more difficult to accommodate. That might require more flexible scheduling or a remote workplace setup. And those sorts of things do run into a little bit more friction depending on what the job is and who the employer is. Technically, it is a legal mandate that they have to be reasonably accommodating of whatever your circumstances is and how your disability presents. But that is the type of thing that tends to be a good amount of litigating over or having to get lawyers involved in hashing out what is and is not reasonable, since that is not a set in stone sort of standard. They're like one person's definition of what is reasonable could be different from another person's. And that's where some of the friction comes in.
Got it. And how many cases like this across the country are we seeing, Nick?
That is a good question in that it is kind of difficult to evaluate since there's since there's no singular definition of what long COVID is, but there was a Brookings Institute study that kind of estimated that about 2 to 4 million people might be out of the workforce due to long COVID. There's a separate study that pegged that probably a little closer to about 500,000 people, but regardless, it is a substantial number of people when you factor across the country. By a different calculation, the Social Security Administration has flagged about 44,000 applications for disability that at least include some mention of COVID. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that COVID is the reason why they're seeking disability. It could be, say, that you got a COVID infection, but then you were paralyzed in a construction accident. Presumably, the paralyzation is the reason why you're seeking the application and COVID is ancillary, but there are also the situations like in an extreme fatigue situation where that might be the reason why you're having to drop out of the workforce. So that number is 44,000, but it's not a very precise number so far.
And with the variety of presentations we're seeing with long COVID, is there, I mean, it sounds like there's a variety of ways that people could file some of these claims for disability, but is there also variation across states that we're seeing and how states are handling it?
So the main hang-up for disability benefits writ large is that it does require a good amount of medical documentation. And that, again, runs into, because long COVID presents in a lot of different ways, that could be difficult both to get a doctor to assess it as a long COVID symptom, not some other condition, or just like to have someone know to even go to the doctor, have that be part of an eventual application for disability or other assistance programs. There is also kind of ramifications for unemployment, but that runs into challenges in that, generally speaking, the rules vary by state, but you're not eligible for unemployment benefits if you have voluntarily kind of left your job. So it's different if you're laid off or fired, what have you. That generally is applicable. But if you just feel like you can no longer be working in your current job and you leave, that may or may not allow you to seek unemployment. And that's why the disability, which implies that, or the definition of that is that you can't be working, that is why people tend to seek disability after the fact.
How have employers been accommodating employees living with long COVID so far? Is there anything that they can continue to do moving forward?
So during the pandemic, a lot of employers instituted remote work, hybrid work, or flexible scheduling policies. But now that we're seeing employers, partly because of the economic situation and other reasons, they're kind of reversing or paring back some of those policies, you might see people who up to now were able to get by and continue working. They may have to be reevaluated, and then you might be seeing more people kind of get into trying to seek workplace accommodations in order to continue at their job, or having to eventually go down the disability path and explore that option. So this is the type of thing that, as employers kind of change up some of their policies that were implemented over the past couple of years or so, that might be the type of factor that pushes more people to have to kind of reckon with long COVID and their ability to continue in the workplace.
What's the next target for disability advocates in this space?
So I talked to a couple disability attorneys, or attorneys who help people seeking workplace accommodations or disability assistance, and they said that one of the things they are looking for is for the Social Security Administration to have clear guidance on what they would look for in determining whether long COVID qualifies for SSDI. Right now, because of the previous federal announcement that said it could be eligible, that at least has led people to start applying for it, but they don't really know what they should be including, and kind of like a roadmap to try to be as successful as possible for the people who are seeking this assistance. They've said that they're kind of in the dark, other than trying to collect as much information as possible so that they can just give as much as they can to the government and hopefully have that be successful. So they want a little bit more guidance so that they can then work with whoever is applying to kind of structure their application.
Amazing. Thank you so much for walking us through all of this, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Brooke Hayes, Afra Abdullah, and Annie Reese are our producers. Our healthcare team editors are Eli Reyes, Dan Goldberg, Barbara Van Tine, Beth Belton, and Sean Zeller. Jenny Ahmet is the executive producer of audio at Politico. I'm Catherine Ellen Foley. Subscribe and follow PulseCheck for a new episode every day. And subscribe to our newsletters where you can read this reporting. Pulse, Future Pulse, and Prescription Pulse. Thanks for listening.